Evolutionary.org presents Evolutionary Hardcore Podcast with your co-hosts, Steve from the American Underground and Mobster from the UK Iron Den. Get ready for the most hardcore and underground info in the industry. And here we go. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6...
Evolution.org Hardcore 2.0 is coming your way. Episode 185 is coming. We got semaglutide, new information on GLP-1 peptides by Altima. We did a previous semaglutide podcast. This one, we're going to kind of redo a lot of the stuff we talked about, kind of get more under the hood about semaglutide. We're going to talk about what it is, the mechanisms of actions, how to dose it as a bodybuilder. We're going to talk about studies. We got some user experiences that we didn't talk to on the last semaglutide one we did. And we're also going to talk about how you're going to integrate it into your Ultima steroid stack to bring you the type of results that you're looking for. First, I remind everybody, we're on Apple. We're on Spotify. Those seem to be the top places for podcasts. We're on different platforms out there. If you really want our podcast to continue so that we can keep this going, you've got to, you know, you got to help us out. You got to like, you got to hit some ratings, comment, tell your friends and family, subscribe, all that good stuff. This way, when a new podcast comes, you'll know that we have a new episode out. So we're always banging out these podcasts out as fast as we can to get you the information. We're the only podcast out there that actually has our stuff taken a look at by a doctor. They go over it, make sure that what we're saying is accurate. And anything that isn't accurate, we will correct it. And that's something that these other podcasts don't care to do. So if you really enjoy the factual information out there and the true information, you got to help us out on that. So let's get into semaglutide. And look, the background of semaglutide is very simple. The drug was marketed by Novo Nordisk as Wegovy for weight management and has been used by millions of people to help them manage their weight. It is also sold as Ozempic as an injectable diabetes medication. They also have it as called Rybelsus as an oral medication for diabetes. So the last year, there were over 15 million prescriptions filled. So this is a drug that doctors feel comfortable prescribing for both weight management and diabetes. And there's a lot of talk to any pharmacists. You'll see that they are all over. I've seen ads for semaglutide online on different places. I've seen commercials for it. I don't know in your side of the pond, Mobster, if they allow pharmaceutical companies to advertise on TV, but they do in America. And I've seen a lot of commercials. So obviously Novo Nordisk has made a lot of money. What were you saying?
We're not allowed to. You've even got roadside posters and bill posters and whatever you call them. And we don't have that at all. Maybe if I think painkilling medication, that's it.
Yeah. And I mean, we can debate whether that's a good idea or not in the future. Obviously, I think most people agree it's not good that pharmaceutical companies advertise on TV and they give doctors vacations to prescribe their medication. You've got pharmaceutical salesmen that are making six figures, basically going door to door with doctors, trying to get doctors to prescribe their medication. We can debate that all day. But at the end of the day, when a drug is prescribed at 15 plus million, you know, that is not just the drug that, you know, doctors are being bribed or that people see the advertisements on TV. That's a drug that doctors feel comfortable prescribing. That's a drug that has a lot of studies behind it. That's a drug that works. So semaglutide definitely does work. We're going to get into user experiences later to show that. And we're also going to talk about the studies that show that. So here's the thing in the United States that's changed, though. Insurance companies are going to pay a large portion, depending on your insurance, obviously, how good your insurance is, for the diabetes prescriptions for semaglutide. But when it comes to the weight management, obesity, they're cutting way back. So we're seeing people, basically, who've been on semaglutide, their insurance companies are saying, no, we're not going to cover this anymore, and they're having to pay out of pocket. So I've seen numbers up to $1,000 a month that people are having to pay now, and they have no choice because they they really depend on the drug to help them with their weight management, and it works so good for them that they're willing to pay that kind of money. Go
Yeah,
ahead.
just briefly, Steve, as we discussed on another show, and without necessarily debating the back and forth with regards to American Medical Insurance or Big Pharma, you and I did on another show where we covered some of the pricing, and Steve's quite correct. $900 to $1,000 a month is typical for US customers. And yet, as I said in one of the shows, Steve, and this number stuck in my mind, typically here, whether it's prescribed or paid for, when it's paid for, it's roughly $90. I believe that average worldwide in those countries where it's available is between is about $160 to $200. So you do have to question. I know there's a lot of obese people in America, but you do have to question arguably the morality of the price difference, because it's five times more on average, more costly in the US than it is elsewhere. And this is, of course, why we're going to talk about companies like Ultima later on, because they will not be charging the equivalent of $1,000 a month, Steve. So back to you.
Yeah, and Umbrella also has a lot of peptides. It's much, much cheaper. We can get it on your own. So semaglutide, look, it's used by bodybuilders to give them the edge. And it's used, we always take things and we use it to our advantage, no matter what it is. And semaglutide is no different. We've seen a lot of guys use semaglutide on their cycles. We've seen a lot of guys use it solo to help them lose weight. So one of the obvious ways to use it is part of a cutting or recomposition cycle. We're gonna get into later on how you can stack your Ultima steroids with the semaglutide to get outstanding results. Now, one more thing I want to throw in here about semaglutide, it's very, very important to understand this, is that the competition is starting to get really, really fierce, and it's been coming on. Eli Lilly has been working on retatrutide, which is not FDA approved yet as of this podcast. It should be in the next year or two. And then tirzepatide, which is already FDA approved. Now, both of those we've done podcasts on as well. So you can go back and listen to those podcasts on both retatrutide and tirzepatide. And the tirzepatide is a dual agonist, and the retatrutide is a triple agonist. Go ahead, Monster.
Yeah, just on the bodybuilders and people, our typical demographic profile of the listener, Steve, historically, just keep it brief. We bodybuilders, people at weight training, et cetera, looking for an edge. What's interesting is that we can be arguably slightly more intelligent than most people, even though that's not the public perception. And we will go away, as you listeners are doing right now, listening to shows like this, going online, doing your research, or back in the day, literally going to research libraries and reading books, because some of you are doing chemistry, some of you are doing biology, and so on and so forth at college and university. And looking at the medical uses for what we call performance-enhancing drugs, typically anabolic steroids, and then looking at how products like semaglutide are used and saying, will this help us on our weight loss, bodybuilding, lean mass, etc. type journey? I would argue, Steve, that why we will have some people, as we've seen a percentage of this on the forums, we know there's going to be a small percentage of this that listen to these shows, that are going to be type 2 diabetics, that are going to be obese or fat and want to lose weight. The vast majority of you will be slightly out of shape and looking to get in shape. And as Steve said, we are literally one of the people we're going to talk about today in the reviews is arguably competitive ready. Someone else, the big one that we're going to discuss is a powerlifter looking to break senior records. And these people are already relatively lean and relatively muscular, and they are looking for an edge. And we look for an edge in terms of it aiding our performance, but also in how we use it, which we, of course, as Steve said, we'll get into later in the show. Back to you, Steve.
So let's get into how it works, the mechanisms of action. And as I mentioned in the last segment, when we compare it to the other GLP-1s, and there are more, by the way, there are more that are coming on, and there's supposedly ones that are going to be quadruple agonists in the future. So we'll have to see how those work. But right now, the three amigos are the tirzepatide, which is a dual agonist, the retatrutide, which is the triple agonist, and then the semaglutide, which we're talking about today, which is a single agonist. And semaglutide, look, GLP-1, that stands for glucagon-like peptide 1 receptor agonist. So, in simple terms, what it's going to do is when you take this stuff, it's going to mimic the natural GLP-1 hormone in the body. So, one of the reasons it works so well as a great diabetes medication is because of its ability to control blood sugar. And it does this by releasing insulin and by manipulating the amount of sugar that's released from the liver. So, when you're a type 2 diabetic, your pancreas is not functioning the way it should. A lot of people, it's a kind of a simple way to explain it, but it's not necessarily scientific. But you could say when you're a type 2 diabetic that you kind of burned out your pancreas. It's through poor lifestyle, poor diet over time. But in reality, what actually happens is you become more insulin resistant over time. And insulin resistance builds to the point where when you eat a meal, your blood sugar gets to a really high amount and you need medication to get it back down. Now, back in the old days, by old days, I'm talking about like early 1900s and before, if you were a diabetic, whether you're type 1 or type 2, you would simply have to be very, very careful about what you consumed. Because if you consume something with sugar, or you consume something, with the type of carbs to spike your blood sugar, you would basically, it'd be a miserable death. You would just basically get really sick. You'd be tired all the time. It'd be really rough. And what happened was you would basically shorten your lifespan tremendously. And you'd end up dying because your blood sugar would be so high and it would continue going high. It's kind of like a roller coaster that slowly goes up, goes down, goes up, goes down, goes up, goes down, but it keeps going up over time. So what ends up happening is you help have the ability to bring down your blood sugar and you end up basically dying a horrible, it's just a miserable, miserable death. So they came up with the idea to start injecting insulin, and very, very few people had access to this. You had to be very wealthy, you had to know a doctor or something like that, and they were able to get you insulin via animals, and you would take the insulin when you needed it, and you would bring down your blood sugar. Now, today, we have very sophisticated medications for diabetics. When some diabetics still prefer to take insulin because the medications might upset their stomach or they don't like the way they feel on the medications, the oral medications. So they'll still take insulin, which is a hormone, and the insulin will drive down their blood sugar. Now, with semaglutide, it does it similar, but not the same way as insulin does. Because when you take insulin, your blood sugar is going to drop. And what happens a lot of times with type 2 diabetes, the diabetics, their blood sugar will drop a lot. And then they'll feel like shit, and then they have to come back. Like, we all have relatives who are type 2 diabetics, and they're like, well, do you have sugar? Do you have sugar? My blood sugar, I feel my blood sugar is low. Do you have sugar in the house? And I've had this happen to me, and I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't have sugar in my house. And they're like, you don't have anything with sugar. I'm like, no, I don't keep sugar in my house. I don't keep candy in my house or lollipops or any of that. And they're like flabbergasted because it's basically a roller coaster, mobster. It's like your blood sugar goes up. Because you eat a shitty diet, you take the insulin, then your blood sugar drops all the way back down. And now you're like, oh my God, I need sugar. I need sugar. I'm going hypo. And then you eat sugar and it spikes it back up. So it's a roller coaster. So semaglutide is amazing because it slowly releases it. It controls your blood sugar by slowly releasing that insulin and it manipulates the amount of sugar that gets released from the liver. So it stabilizes your blood sugar. So this is why a lot of doctors prescribe their patients semaglutide and it keeps things balanced. Now, for weight loss, I'm going to get into that a little bit. You wanted to say something?
Well, two things, funny enough. One, I've literally seen some time ago now in the post office queue, Steve, of all places, and a conversation just stuck in my mind. A rather large, almost certainly obese lady asking for a tin of Coke, purely, and then saying she was type 2 diabetic. And I'm thinking, lose some weight, love, because, being judgmental, whatever. And then exactly like Steve said, that she said something to the effect of having to have a full fat, as we call the red tin, the full fat original form of Coca-Cola on her at all times. And of course, I'm thinking of caffeine, I'm thinking of sugar, like Steve said. And again, being obese and thinking, what kind of day is it for a person where your peaks and troughs are so bad and so out of shape and so reliant on having products like that with you at all times because you might pass out in the street? So I have physically seen that particular one. What is interesting, and Steve's going to touch upon this now, is how often we see people that you've seen with glutide, Steve, talk about literally, and you can discuss this for your own experience, literally not wanting to finish their meals, not wanting to have the volume of food that they're used to, and still feeling just fine. So talk about that.
But it's not only that, and we're gonna get into the studies in a little bit. But one of the things that semaglutide is, which what I was getting at, the one of the reasons it beats these other diabetes medications and using insulin is that it doesn't cause hypoglycemia when you take it. So we've seen the studies done on thousands and thousands of people. Not a single person reported hypoglycemia, and these are obese people, and these are people on diabetes. So this is why semaglutide.
Just for the listeners' benefit, Stephen, one of the shows we've discussed, 17,000 participants in one study, and I believe that was the one that was over a year.
And we're gonna rehash some of those studies and talk about some new studies in a second, but I want to finish the mechanisms of action, Mobster. Give me a floor on this one. So let me go over what semaglutide does. So you specifically what it does, and you kind of get an idea how it compares to other diabetes medications and other, when it comes to other weight loss medications. We're gonna get into the studies as well and explain to you how little side effects it has compared to other fat burners. Because other fat burners, they will burn you from the inside. They will cause your heart rate to speed up. They will cause your heart to enlarge. They will cause you to get all shaky and jittery all day. And semaglutide doesn't do that. So that's the beauty part of semaglutide, is that it gives you what these, it blows away these other fat burners. But it also doesn't give you the side effects that those other fat burners have. You get more side effects from a fat burner over-the-counter stimulant than you would for semaglutide. So that's one of the beauty parts of the way that they came up with this GLP-1s. It's really a beautiful thing, and it's because it's hormonal in the body, and they structured it in a way where it doesn't cause these side effects. So let's talk about three specific ways when it comes to weight loss, how it's going to help you. Number one, it's going to slow down the emptying of the stomach. So what this is going to do is it's going to force you to eat smaller portions, and it's going to punish you for overeating. So you're going to be eating a meal. Let's say you go out to dinner, right? And you're sitting there, everyone's having plates of food. All your fat ass relatives are having plates of food. You get a plate of food. You sit down, you usually be able to drown that first plate, no problem, then go after a second plate, then go after the third plate. But on semaglutide, you're not even gonna be able to finish that first plate. You're gonna feel full really quickly on it. So that's because of the slowing down and emptying the stomach. So it's forcing, it's almost like it's shrinking your stomach, Mobster. Number two, it increases the feeling of being full during a meal, as I kind of got into. Because what happens is, in a normal situation, a lot of us who are bodybuilders over time, I can remember running my, it was probably my second cycle, and I was doing DECA, and I was eating so much that I felt like I was ready to have
Yes.
my second meal, third meal, fourth meal, like after I even finished. So you get satiated when you're on semaglutide. Number three, it reduces appetite overall, so you don't feel the urge to eat every 2 to 3 hours like most Americans do. And so that ties into what I did before. So most Americans, they get up in the morning, they get in their car to drive to their job, right? They usually live in the suburbs or live in the rural, so they gotta drive to their job in their car. Americans drive a lot more than any other country. And what do they do? They stop at the fast food joint or the Dunkin' Donuts or the McDonald's, whatever, and they get their coffee, they get their donut, they get their bagel, they get whatever, right? Because we got to have our breakfast according to the propaganda, right? So then what happens is you eat about 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock, you go to work, 2, 3 hours later, time for lunch. I gotta have a brunch, they call it in America. It's I don't even know what I never even knew what brunch meant, but apparently it's eating between breakfast and lunch. So you gotta eat your brunch, then you gotta have lunch. So you either go out to lunch with your buddies at work, or the company you work for orders lunch. Usually it's pizza, something cheap, pizza, Chinese food, something like low quality Chinese food, whatever. Eat that. Then you gotta have a snack, mobster. You gotta have a snack around 2, 3 o'clock. You can't go the whole day without no snack. You gotta have your snack. Then you gotta come home. Make sure you have your big ass meal when you get home. Usually it's something, out of a box or something processed. You gotta eat your big meal, mobster. Or you go and you go on your app on your phone. You order in Grubhub or Uber Eats or whatever the fuck that is, and then they deliver it to your house. Okay, and then you eat your big lunch. And then before bed, we gotta have something else, mobster, because we can't go to bed on an empty stomach. Heaven forbid we'll go hypo. So we gotta have another meal. Look, on semaglutide,
That's crazy.
you're not gonna eat that much. You're not gonna be able to eat that much on semaglutide. You're not even gonna feel hungry on semaglutide. Like, there's a good chance you go the whole day without eating. You got no problems. So that's the difference with semaglutide. You're not gonna be able to eat every 2, 3 hours. So. A lot of people don't understand that, and I'll let you talk about this, monster. A lot of people don't grasp what these GLP-1s are all about. They think in their mind, oh my God, I'm gonna take GLP-1. I'm gonna lose all my muscle. I gotta eat every 2 hours. I've been brainwashed into thinking I gotta eat every 2 hours. I'm gonna lose all my muscle. I gotta get 500 grams of protein, blah, blah, blah. So here's the thing about semaglutide. If your goal is to bulk, then semaglutide is not something for you to use. But if your goal is to do a recomposition or cut, then semaglutide can be a great addition. It's as simple as that. And
Yeah.
that's what it is. So talk
Let
about that a
me
little bit, Mobster.
yeah,
We'll talk
let
about
me
the
just it's
study.
just more the bodybuilding mentality than anything else, Steve. But I understand it. I'm sure that at some point you and I have been guilty of this, in especially when we first got started. And I've literally discussed with protein experts, the anabolic window, Brian Bachelador and Kerry Kays and other people back in the day. And the importance of, protein straight after a workout. And look, the longer I've trained, the less I realize these things are important. And a lot of the time, when again, this is the bodybuilding mentality, and I said earlier on, we'll go away and research and we'll look at these things. The problem is, a lot of the time, is when you take these pieces of information in isolation. So in a study, they were on a restricted diet. In a study, they were only eating one meal a day. In a study, they were given 20 gram feedings and so on. And in reality, that's not how you live. That's not, Steve and I have touched upon this on other shows when we've talked about nature. It is human nature to do the whole feast and famine thing. And the problem that we have in modern society, I think Steve just touched upon it. There's the whole grazing thing that people just, what Steve was talking about. I thought grazing, that's literally a little bit of food every so often, multiple times through the day. And the reality of the situation is, unless you are literally, and it will apply to a handful of our listeners, Steve, unless you are literally doing a job like down a fucking coal mine with a pick and a shovel, never mind a drill, a big machine, a pick and a shovel, burning thousands of calories a day, you can quite easily adapt to this situation where you might have something to eat in the morning, go out and burn several thousand calories, smashing the fuck out of a coal seam down a mine, and then come home and eat and still be perfectly fine. Because if not, us as a human race would have died. And the feast and famine thing works on that basis. The problem, as I said, we are like 15 minutes away with Uber Eats, like Steve said, 15 minutes away. Even if the house has got no food whatsoever, within 15 minutes, I can have someone knocking on the door with a pizza. I'm doing this show from my home office. I am minutes away, Steve, from either getting a meal deal from the local shop or walking upstairs and making something to eat. I've actually got food kind of prepped. So I am minutes away. And the reality of the situation is that even in arguably first world, America, UK, Europe, even if you are quote unquote poor, you are still minutes away from food compared to some
And we're gonna
places in the
get,
world.
yeah, let's when we talk about forum user experiences, We'll get more into how to diet and how to train
And
on it
how
as well.
well
That's
they've
important.
coped, Steve, and how they've adapted and how they've seen quote unquote the light in terms of food and protein
Yeah.
intake. Look, the sort of simple fact of the matter is none of us are going to starve to death, and we are incredibly adaptable. And what I've said to you before on previous shows when we're discussing glutide and the other GLP-1 type products is what is fascinating for me, and I know that you've touched upon this a little bit earlier on, is how we are literally mimicking what the body already does in terms of how we can adapt to food and no food. And the idea that this particular product, you feel full, it takes longer for the stomach to empty. So there's a sort of more consistent level of energy, and you are satisfied with food, less amount of food. And that is part of what they've done is literally see what was, as you said, the glucagon, what was literally present in the body, mimic that. And that's the reason why this product has been so incredibly successful.
Let's get into the studies a little bit, and then we'll get more into user experiences. I really want to talk about, how you're supposed to eat on this. Very, very important. So on these studies, they took one, the first study I want to talk about, they took diabetes and overweight people. They ran around 2.5 milligrams a week for 20 weeks, okay? So the dosing was anywhere from 1.5 milligrams, I believe, up to 3 milligrams. I think the maximum dosage was a little bit under 3 milligrams, as I recall from reading this study. So they ended up losing almost 11% of their total body weight. So let's say if they're 300 pounds mobster, that's about 35 pounds. If they're 200 pounds obese, then you're talking about around 22 pounds. So that's pretty damn good, man. And those that kept going for 48 weeks lost another 8% on top of that. So we're talking about 20% of your total body weight. That's a fifth of your total body weight. So you go from 300 pounds and knock off 20% of that weight. That's pretty fucking good, man. That's fucking amazing. So we're talking like 60 pounds for a 300-pound person. A 200-pound obese female, for example, if she lost 20% of her body weight, that'd be what, 40 pounds? So that's fucking amazing, man. And what makes the study fascinating, we've seen this with the other GLP-1 studies as well that we've talked about in previous episode, is that those that were given a placebo instead for going to that 48 weeks ended up gaining back 7%. So they lost 11% on average, but then they gained back 7% when they came off. So they basically gained back more than half of what they lost by taking the placebo, even though they were following the same diet and the same exercise program as the people who stayed on the semaglutide. So obviously semaglutide, by staying on it, works good. Obviously you're going to lose the bulk of your weight that first 6 months, but if you continue for another 6 months, you're going to lose more by staying on it. But if you come off of it cold turkey, even by keeping your diet and training on point, you're going to gain more than half of that back. So that just shows how good this stuff works. Now, it also shows that it's not permanent. You're not going to lose the weight and just keep it off like magic, because the hormone that you're taking, that GLP-1, that mimics that GLP-1 in your body, is going to be gone. So you're going to gain it back. So it's something to think about if you're going to use this drug. Is it something that I'm going to stay on a maintenance dose of going forward, or is it something I'm just going to run for 4 or 5 or 6 months? And then I'm going to come off cold turkey and deal with that rebound effect and then possibly run it again in the future. So that's something to think about from that study. Monster, what are your thoughts on that study before we move on to the second study?
Yeah, I mean, look, obviously, when people are listening to this show, they're looking at what we would call effective dosages. They're looking for, I mean, the 20% stuff that Steve just referred to in terms of the amount of weight that you would lose is unfucking believable. I'll just touch on that particular point, Steve. I've mentioned in a recent show what studies call statistically significant numbers. And this doesn't necessarily relate to this particular product, but quite often they will say that something is statistically significant if it's 2, 3, 4%. Now look at what the numbers that we've just thrown out there. Arguably, especially if the dose is running longer over the year, 20 fucking percent, Steve. That's not just statistically significant. That's out fucking standing. There's no argument. It's above and beyond the placebo. It's above and beyond what would reasonably expected. It's above and beyond, I would argue, some of the ways that the obesity and fat burning type products, I'm including, and it was be said on another show, Steve, methamphetamine, literally amphetamine sulfate, used to be given to ladies that were overweight in the 60s and 70s. And like Steve said, the massive amount of side effects. But you're looking at percentiles. When what we've done with some of these studies is we looked at placebo, we've looked at just exercise and the dietary fixes, and you look at the what happens afterwards when the study stops and the people go back to doing what they're doing, and you look at all those numbers, and there's you cannot argue against just how fucking effective a product is when you're looking at 20%. Make it look at it this way, guys. You're listening to the show. If I said I was going to make your arms 20% bigger, or your waist 20% smaller, or your bench press 20% heavier, you would be blown the fuck away. You would just go, oh my God, I bench 300 pounds. That means I'm going to bench 360. My waist is 40 inches. Oh, then it's going to be like 6 or 7 inches less. That is out fucking standing. 20% is a when you and again, these are not small studies. We talked about in another show, we study had 10 fucking participants. These are thousands of people. And it's not for a short period of time. It's not a
Yeah.
week or 2 weeks. It's a fucking year. Those numbers are, I think the researchers themselves were probably surprised at the numbers they were seeing.
It is, and if you compare it to other fat burners, it beats anything out there. These GLP-1s beat anything out there. So let's get on to the next one. So this is a study that was done with semaglutide versus those who got the very risky and dangerous sleeve gastrectomy, bariatric surgery. And we've seen people over the years, a lot of celebrities who have gotten this done. There's that weatherman guy. I don't know if you know who that is, mobster in America, who got it done years ago. Yeah, Al Roker was his name. And he was on Today's Show. He was the weatherman. Everyone loves him. He's like, always smiling and happy on TV. And he got it done. He was an overweight guy. He got it done. He looks really skinny. He lost 45 pounds over several months doing it. So here's the problem, though. This type of surgery is risky. You're talking about a 4% chance of having a major complication after getting it done, which is a pretty high amount. That's for every 100 people who get it done, four of them are going to have a very complicated situation. Anytime you have any type of surgery, it's a risk. Okay, so they compared it. Now, those who took the semaglutide again lost 20% of their body weight over the course of 16 months. Now, the beauty part of it was that compared to those who had the surgery, semaglutide won across the board. It won when it came to lipid health. It won when it came to glucose. It helped when it came to weight loss. It helped when it came to body mass index, BMI, and even helped with things like heart rate. So you're going to tell me, what would you rather do? Take semaglutide for 16 months, or would you rather go under and have another human being do some complicated surgery on you that has an inherent risk of possibly even death? And that's been reported as well with these type of sleeve surgery. So no brainer, mobster. I'd rather take the semaglutide all day and have all those improvements with my health. I don't think it's
Absolutely.
worth it. I don't think it's
Let me
worth it.
just touch on that for one point, Steve. And this is sometimes, it's actually something I've mentioned before. What we would call relatively simple surgery back in the day is still opening you the fuck up, putting you at risk of infection, leaving you in hospital, costing even way more than the $1,000 a month for semaglutide. Way more, just for a couple of days, Steve. And is arguably the equivalent of me stabbing you in the gut. And then having to have you stitched up. People don't understand because it feels like, oh, it's cosmetic, it's to do with obesity. It's fucking surgery. I'm literally opening your gut up and I'm going to sort of pinch part of your stomach. So, and then, of course, it doesn't deal with people blending their food to still get it in, Steve. So I would rather take a tablet or a small injection and deal with that, then literally have open gut surgery, because that's what we're discussing. And people need to understand that just because it's cosmetic surgery, it's still fucking surgery. See, I'm with Steve on this one.
All right, so the next one we're going to talk about, this is a cool study. This was done over the course of 4 years, and this was done on obese or those in poor heart health. Patients lost 8 centimeters off their waist and 10% of their total body weight versus placebo group, who only lost 1% of their total weight. And this study was done on over 15,000 people. So this was a big study, and it was done over the course of a year. So a lot of people like this. This kind of gets into semaglutide. A lot of people like semaglutide. It's been FDA approved for the longest time out of these GLP-1s. It's been studied for the longest time. And a lot of people aren't comfortable with that. A lot of people aren't comfortable using retatrutide, which is not FDA approved as of this podcast. And they're not comfortable using tirzepatide, which has only been FDA approved for, I think, 2 years now, or one, or about 2 or 3 years now max. So a lot of people like the semaglutide because we've seen it a long time. So that is a good take a look at that. You compare 10% body weight versus placebo group, who was only 1%, and that shows you semaglutide is a really, really, really good drug. So let's get into user. Do you have any other studies you want to talk about, Monster, before we get into user experiences?
I had a few news ones, and I'll just read these headlines up with a very brief description. So, for example, and this is to support something Steve said earlier on, these are all from June of this year, Steve, so they're literally weeks old at the worst. Tufts researchers design new generation of weight loss medications. It goes on to say weight loss drugs like Ozempic and Wegovy are used by over 15 million adults in the US, or 4.5% of the population. There's two contradictory news headlines here which are worth looking at, Steve. I'll just read one out, but the other one contradicts it. Weight loss drug semaglutide proven safe and effective for people with schizophrenia. Another one claimed that bariatric surgery, the one that Steve was talking about a few minutes ago, I might be mispronouncing that, actually was better for the psychological aspects. And this completely opposing. And this is where we have to be careful with studies. So we do. Steve and I do look at all of the studies. And again, here's another one, Steve. I'll just read one more before we talk about experiences. Real world study finds lower weight loss with GLP-1 drugs due to early discontinuation. And what that means is that people are coming off it early, probably because of the cost, Steve, or not using effective dosages because, again, of the cost. So they'll cut the dosage in half, or they'll go to a much lower maintenance dose. Then perhaps they ought to, and as per the studies. So that's just to me looking at that. And again, this is a Cleveland Clinic, so it'd be US based. People thinking about the cost, I suspect, versus doing it at the right way. Just, I mean, we will touch upon this when we talk about user experiences because we're going to compare arguably some of the numbers that we've seen dosed in the studies against some of the ways that people have been dosing in the user experiences. So we'll compare that in a little while. Again, there's literally dozens of headlines, and I'm looking. I think there was 12 just from the 10th of June to today, Steve. So that's how important it is it's out there. And like I said, you will see sometimes, as I've just mentioned, two contradictory studies. How can it both can't be right? So I would look at the long-term stuff, and we are starting to see long-term. We're looking at 2 to 3 years now, arguably more, since approval and regular use. And again, 14 million people, I think I said, Steve, just a few minutes ago, or 4.5%. What was it? 15 million adults, or 4.5% of the population. That is a huge fucking number. And just consider this as we go into the next portion. Think of medications, listeners, that you've heard of before. Think of the amount of people using this medication. And today, Steve, as we've done these shows and we do the research for these shows and we look at the studies for these shows, what percentage of people have we heard, and I actually mentioned this on a previous show, who've had proper actual side effects above and beyond the stomach discomfort and nausea when they've either started a dose and not got used to it or when they've changed a dose? And I'm thinking of the kind of side effects that we've seen with other medications, which could be absolutely horrific. We haven't seen any of that. And it's 15 million fucking adults using this product on a regular basis or for a decent length of time. And we are not hearing the kind of horror stories that we sometimes hear with new medications just by virtue of the sheer number of people using it. I would expect to have seen a dozen cases of this or two cases of that. And just as an example, just to finish this point, there was one where Sweden manufactures a great deal of semaglutide. It's actually a very big business for the pharma companies. And I think there were some like tens of thousands of people that have been employed over there in that industry and producing, amongst other things, these products. So for some reason, the Swedish looked at one of these things and they were kind of arguing. I think there was like two people in thousands of users that were talking about a sense of suicidal thoughts. And what I said to Steve was, if you and I went out and surveyed 1,000 people in the street, Steve, we would find more than two people. So as a percentage, thousands of users, and this is just semaglutide in Sweden, finding two out of thousands, not a thousand, like I've just said, but of thousands, feeling suicidal is statistically less than you would find in the normal population not using this product. So in other words, bullshit. It's just you'd find more if you spoke to people in the streets, Steve. So yeah, just keep in all of our studies, we try to do science-based and based on actual statistics and information we can use.
Perfect. So let me go over some new information on semaglutide that Novo Nordisk. So they're actually coming up with a new drug, Mobster, and this is fresh off the wire. So this is we're the only podcast that's even talking about this. So if you're listening to our podcast, as soon as we publish this, nobody's heard of this. All these fake gurus online never heard of this. And this is kind of cool. But they're actually coming up with a new drug that's called CagriSema. And it's exactly what the name says. It's half cagrilintide and half semaglutide. So it's a mix of both. And the idea behind it, and in the studies that we've seen, the idea is that's going to be even more effective than semaglutide. In one study, which I'll link in the article, which you can read about, showed a 22.7% mean weight reduction in adults with overweight or obesity issues. So they're trying to kind of stay competitive with Eli Lilly. So we'll have to see if they end up succeeding at that or they don't, or if they get left behind with the with retatrutide about to be FDA approved in the next year or two. So it's good that these pharmaceutical companies are fighting each other and trying to, outdo each other. That's a good thing to see. And, as soon as anything new comes, you know that we're going to talk about it on the podcast. So let's get into user experiences, Mobster. You take the floor on this one before we get into dosing and side effects. Go ahead.
Right. So as I said to Steve in a pre-show, we wanted to go away and look at the experiences of actual users on the forum. And annoyingly, I wanted more information than some of these guys have given us. So the first two or three are going to be relatively short, but we will still discuss their experiences. And it's still positive, Steve. And then the one that Steve actually suggested I interview, I've done that. And we're going to really go to town on that particular one. So I'm going to do these in reverse order. One particular one, Steve, was just asking about dosing. And again, we were looking at the doses that Steve talked about in the study and going from there. And that was, I tried to say his name, UJEASEO. And he was again just asking about dosing. And we've come in with suggestions and protocols. And we encourage you to come onto the forums to do the same. Now, one which was kind of interesting, but unfortunately for reasons that we're about to talk about, didn't last as long as perhaps we would have liked. And I suspect if he'd have stuck with it and not had the issues that he'd have had, Steve, he'd have had an even better result. So this particular one was called Semaglutide Journey. The last one was Semaglutide Doses Schedule. The name of the member is Poo Poo Bum. There you go, that's his actual name. The issue here, Steve, was he's an alcoholic. By his own admission, this is not me being a prick. He's literally said that got major alcoholic issues. He was only drinking, and again, this is all in the log, when his wife was at work, and he was listing the alcohol that he was drinking. But the positive is he started to use semaglutide and was massively supportive of the forum, saying you can get off the alcohol, you can reduce the amount of alcohol you're doing. And what he found, and what I was fascinated by, Steve, we talked about the inability to consume the same volume of food, the same frequency of food when you're using semaglutide. He couldn't drink as much as he would normally drink booze. And this was a combination of beer and spirits. Quite bad, really, Steve, unfortunately. he couldn't physically drink the amount of hooch that he was having when he wasn't on semaglutide. And it was a damn shame that he was just a few weeks in, seeing these effects, kind of actually reducing his alcohol, getting positive support, and unfortunately just didn't stay the course. I suspect what's happened here, Steve, is he wanted to drink more than he wanted to reduce the drinking and continue using the semaglutide. So unfortunately, we have done shows on this. We are very supportive of people that are making a positive change to their life on the forums, all kinds of addictions. Unfortunately, I suspect in this case, Steve, the alcoholic addiction was too powerful, and he just wanted to be able to drink when his wife wasn't at home. The next one, and this is a flipping this around, and the next two, three, actually, the next, yeah, I would argue that two of the following three are freaky. They have great physical responses, either for strength or for muscle. Now, what I'm about to talk about now is Pigsy. And Pigsy run, unfortunately, I wish he'd run it longer, Steve. Semaglutide for 4 weeks. He ran a log called the Semaglutide or Ozempic log. And he started in late 2024, as I say, only for 4 weeks. He tried, and it did seem to be working for him. He was working with a coach that had a lot of clients that had an effective result doing this. The microdosing protocol. Now, you and I, just to touch on this for a second. I've discussed microdosing. All of the GLP-1 type products require one injection a week. Now, that's regardless of whether it's a single milligram or the higher end for one of the products, 15 milligrams. Every single one was one dose per week. And part of the reason for that, I suspect, Steve, is it's a lot easier to persuade people to use dosages. And we will talk about dosing amongst the users as well and suggested dosages for you guys. It's a lot easier to get people to stick to using the medication if you only have to take it once a week. Just put it in your phone, schedule once a week, do the injection, take the pill, job done. So anyway, daily microdosing, 0.6 milligrams, got the wanting less food thing straight away. And as I said, he only lasted a month, which is a damn shame. But Pigsy is a genetic freak. He's a guy that looks like he's ready for stage. He's now running retigrotruside, Steve. The final one before we get to the big one is zucchini. And zucchini is called the pre-cycle log, a recommendation review on my planned microdosing cycle. Bit of a mouthful, Steve. Those that follow the forums will know that zucchini is a big time follower of the ketogenic diet approach, literally with the keto strips and everything else. Let me give you just some numbers here, Steve. And it's the interesting here was the effect of SEMA after the length of time that he'd been running his log with the ketogenic approach. February to June of this year, he was 114 kilograms, that's 252 pounds in February, Steve. This is what I've written down here. And by the time he got to the end, which would be June of this year, he'd fallen down to 91.6 kilograms, 202 pounds. That is a 50 pounds loss in what's that, Steve? 5 months? 50 pounds lost, so 10 pounds a fucking month. That included, but he also took some semaglutide with him on holiday. And of that proportion of the 50 odd pounds, 3 kilograms or 6.6 pounds additional loss with the SEMA. And that is, again, following the keto protocol that he'd been following. So to me, Steve, you know, when it comes to weight loss, fat loss especially, it's not consistent. It's not linear. The same as muscle gain isn't linear. And to then get an additional 6.5 pounds, 6.6 pounds fat loss with SEMA when you've been running keto for months is fan fucking tastic. But let me do the big one. Now, this is Roid Rage 69. Roid Rage is a big time member on the forums, very active, very supportive. Him and his wife, Mrs. Roid Rage, are training for strength. He's literally looking for two different weight classes in powerlifting, I believe, in July, Steve. So in the next month or so, and he's
He's our
looking.
best friend on the forum too. We got a
Oh,
couple of
we were kind of headbutting for 5 minutes, but now we're cool. Just and that was more of a getting your wife to come on the forum and talk for herself. But he's actually was already doing it, and I misconstrued it. Anyway, so we had a DM and we sorted that out, and he was great at replying to my message for this particular show. So Roid Rage is looking to pull 700 pounds deadlift at his new lower body weight. So I as a Q&A, what dose are you or was you using And did that dose change during the use? He said using 1 milligram right now after 2 months of lower dosages. He actually started, Steve, a 0.25 of a milligram. I didn't ask him about the frequency. I then went on to say, how long did you or will you be using it? And he said, 3 to 4 months at a time is as long as I feel like using it. It gets tiring eating only 1,750 calories a day and getting the volume of protein that he wanted, the number of protein, but that was the difficult part. This is more to do with maintaining his mass or lean mass and his strength, but we'll go on. I said, I know you've lost a load of weight, and I believe it was 55 pounds, which is, again, absolutely fucking outstanding, to say the least. What was it when you started, and where are you now? He says, and I know he actually says total of 50, I believe it's 55 pounds, so he's done himself out here. He says, I've done 3 cycles of semaglutide, and Jane, that's Mrs. Roy in Rage, lost a total of 50 pounds while on it. So that's fantastic for his wife. So 55 pounds for him and 50 pounds for his wife. That's fucking amazing. These are not obese people. He might have had a bit of the belly before, but and he was a big motherfucker. This last stint is much less because as I decided, I didn't want to lose so much muscle. And we're going to talk about stacks briefly. The first time I lost 20 pounds in a month, Steve, and lost a little bit too much muscle at the same time. So that was an issue. And again, that's dietary, trying to get the protein in. So as difficult as that was to maintain the muscle tissue, but literally make weight for the competition and still be strong. And we've seen his log, Steve, as you know, and we've seen some great numbers, PRs being broken just a few weeks ago. That's just starting to slow down now as he approaches the maxes he needs to do. And I said, talk briefly about pluses and negatives, like side effects, effects on lifting power, etc. He says, pluses are it's easy not to eat, so you can lose weight easily. Minus is a muscle loss. Sides are icky feeling on high-fat foods. You discussed something similar recently, Steve. Taking high-fat foods, as you said, he says, can get gassy. And I believe you mentioned that just the other day. I wouldn't know about lifting power since I'm on a high androgenic load. Again, this is important for the listeners as a means of maintaining his strength. He says, while on semaglutide, he goes on to say, trend is a must if using this weight loss drugs to preserve muscle. So keep that in mind when we're talking about stacks and cycles. And then I'd finally finish with the, how did the diet change? Diet stayed the same whether on or off GLP drugs. Just eat less. And again, let me just go over that point as well. So we've discussed logs on the forum many times. We've done specific shows just on logs. And I believe Roid Rage would be a good example here. We don't get to see his daily diet too often, but he has covered it a little bit in the past. And I've even seen someone else said that their diet is so consistent, there's no point me showing you guys the same fucking food every day. I understand that. But it's simple this. If you know that your macros are good, if you know that your diet is clean, and if you are literally plugged in, programmed, if you like, into, and this again applies more to our demographic than the general population. We know what we're supposed to be eating. We know when we're cheating. We know how to meal prep. You've got no excuse. And if you're like Void Rage and you are literally go, well, I will eat this, and I know this is what I need to eat. This is the amount of protein I need to get in. And I can see from my log that my numbers are going up or going down. I can see that I'm getting leaner. And we've seen this with people with logs posting pictures, whether they're on semaglutide or whether they're just cutting. And that consistent control of their diet is important. And I think this is what he's talking about here when he says just eating less. He was physically incapable of eating more. And I think that may be the mind part of it, Steve, is, how much further do I need to get leaner? And yeah. One of the things he's talking about is body weight for, he's actually looking to lift in 2 weight classes. So he was aiming for a particular number so he can compete in those classes and break those records. He doesn't need to get, from his perspective, leaner. A lot of the listeners will. The leaner you get, the better you look. And that's approachable as well. So talk a little bit about some of those.
So a couple points. The fatty thing, I noticed that as well. I talk about it in my log. I'm on retrudotride. I'm not on semaglutide, but retrudotride is also GLP-1. So one of the things I notice when you eat something that's high fatty, because of I believe it's because of the slow gastric emptying and the fatty foods, especially if you're sensitive, you know, when it comes to eating high fat foods, very, very, very oily foods. So when I went out to a dinner, I had a plain a brisket, right? And brisket's a very high fat meat. So just that basically gave me a lot of bloat, and I was supposed to work out the next morning, but because I ate so late, the next morning I woke up and I was fucking bloated. I couldn't go work out. So I had to skip my workout, and I basically had to take like two or three shits that day. And then I worked out in the afternoon. I was able to work out finally in the afternoon. So I don't like that shit. I don't like having to miss a workout, because I feel bloated or whatever. So you got to be careful eating late or eating high fatty foods or eating anything that can upset your stomach. Fermented foods are notorious for that as well. So those are things to watch out for when you're on semaglutide. Another thing about roid rage is he mentioned about the semaglutide. The rebound effect that we saw in the studies where the placebo group gained back a lot of weight, and the ones that stayed on semaglutide kept losing. Well, he says that, look, the rebound effect can be an advantage, because what you can do is you can lose the weight, while you're on it. And then when you come off, the rebound effect works beautifully if you're a bodybuilder or you're a power lifter, because you can build back strength and build back muscle better without
Yes,
putting on
yes.
so much fat. So you can use that to your advantage. So it doesn't have to be a disadvantage. It can be an advantage if you do it properly, and if you use that to your advantage. So let's talk about dosing, as we finish out this podcast, and we're going to talk about a couple quick cycles that you can do. So I'm just going to go over the dosing, Mobster. Listen, at the end of the day, most of you are going to do perfectly fine starting out at a quarter milligram for the first 2 weeks. Then you can increase it to a half a milligram for the next 2 weeks after that. You want to give it 4 or 5 weeks to really see what's going on, because it is going to be a slow release. They designed it, as Mobster said earlier, for weekly injections for a reason. They didn't want people to take this stuff for 6 months or a year and have to pin it every fucking day. Who the fuck wants to do that? So they designed it to be pinned once a week, and that's what people were
Yep.
doing in the studies. They were doing it once a week. So you got to give it some time to really kick in. You can't just take it for 3 days and be like, "Oh my God, I'm not losing weight. I'm gonna keep increasing the dose." No, you got to give it some time to start working. So after the first 4, 5, 6 weeks, keeping it a half a milligram or lower, then you can start increasing it little by little. Maybe increase it to 0.75, maybe increase it to 1 milligram, week by week at your leisure. You can also drop it back down if the side effects get too much when it comes to the stomach irritation, which I'm going to get to in a second, the side effects. You can drop it back down a little bit. You can drop it down to a quarter milligram, or drop it down a half a milligram. And you can do it like that. Or you could just drop it down entirely down to a quarter milligram total, and then try that for a couple of weeks, then move it back up. So there's no rule. So at the end of the day, you just got to kind of experiment. But at the end of the day, I don't see any purpose for most of you out there using any more than
No.
2 milligrams or 2.5 milligrams max, because, and at the end of the day. So you've got to kind of try it and do weekly. It's very important to track this shit. Come on the forum and track your dosing, track your side effects, track how you're feeling, track your, how much calories you're eating and all this stuff, and your weight changes. And this way you can kind of get a good sense of where it needs to be. And then,
Just as I sort of from the logs there, Steve, the highest was Pigsy, 0.6 per day, which I believe is 3 to 3.5 a week, somewhere there or thereabouts. And yet, roid rage was starting at a quarter of a milligram, exactly like Steve said, and only went up to 1 milligram and still lost 55 fucking pounds, Steve.
yep, you don't have to run much. That's why a lot of people like it. Now, the oral version, I just gotta say this. Most of you are never gonna go near the oral version, but maybe you have friends or something that are diabetics who take the oral version. I just wanna make sure 2 to 14 milligrams a day is what they're gonna run in that situation. But I highly recommend just sticking with the injectable. Now, the side effects, let me go over this before we talk about some Ultima cycles. Diarrhea, I've had it here and there. And it's funny, was the diarrhea. I weighed myself before and after the diarrhea, and it's like my weight dropped like 1 or 2 pounds after the diarrhea. So it's all that water weight just getting flushed out of your body. The heartburn was an issue for me on retruditride. Sometimes it's an issue, but it seems like the first month, month and a half on it, I had the heartburn, and it's when I was increasing the dose too much. So when I dropped the dose back down, that went away. So my advice is, if you start dealing with diarrhea or heartburn, take another look at the foods you're eating, but also take a look at your dosing. Nausea is also an issue. If I eat an extra bite, I can't tell you how many times I've eaten foods and I've eaten a bite and I was like, whoa, if I eat this, I'm gonna throw up. So I spit it out. So B, just look, guys, you guys and gals out there, spit it out. Spit it out. There's no reason to force feed yourself. Just spit it out, put it in a box, and save it for later. That's what I highly recommend. And then, other stomach issues here and there. So those are the main issues. Now, some serious potential side effects that we've seen over time has been effects on the pancreas, kidney issues, and things like tumors in the thyroid. But these are very extreme side effects, and these are things. Now, the nice thing about these new generation GLP-1s, the retatrutide and tirzepatide, we're seeing less of that. So keep that in mind. But you never know. Maybe over time, after a few years, we'll see stuff like that come up with those too. So anyway, these are very powerful hormonal drugs, and they can have side effects. We just have to be aware, of that. Just want to be. But compared to any of these other fat burners, semaglutide is going to have way less side effects than things like Clen or albuterol or DMP or over-the-counter thermal fat
Even
burner.
as I said earlier in the show, Steve, some of the medications that were previously prescribed by doctors for years were completely addictive.
So let's talk about a few good cycles, Mobster. Why don't you start? Tell us a good cycle that you've seen people have success with semaglutide.
Right, so just to start as a preface this, I'm literally looking at Ultima's own semaglutide products on the screen in front of me, Steve, and I'm telling you now, guys, a milligram a week. It is a fraction of what you would pay normally. So, what we said on previous shows applies here, Steve. You're not looking to bulk up here. So, you're not looking for D-bulk. You're not really looking for Anadrol. You're not probably looking at Sustanon Deca used as a bulker here. So, what would we talk about from the orals? And you and I discussed this recently. So, absolutely one of my favorites. And I've said this again and again and again. And it's just as good for lean mass gaining, which is appropriate here, as it is for strength, which is my favorite use, would be low dose Anavar, Steve, 30 to 50 milligrams a day. And Ultima does a great Anavar, of course. And that would be typically 4 to 8 weeks. I would again be looking at semaglutide long term and Anavar short term. Something that Steve mentioned before, and I'll agree with again, and I'll say this one now before bringing Steve into a couple of examples, would be, oh, Steve mentioned femo Anavar dosing. We're looking for fractions here. Companies, and I believe Ultima does the same, have a Femavar type product, which is dosed a lot lower. And you're looking at probably around 2.5 milligrams a day. You don't really need to be doing higher doses. It's maybe 5 milligrams at the top end. It's that much more effective in women than it is in men, but a much lower dosage just because you're just physically not typically, as a user, as big as most of the guys. And again, 4 to 8 weeks for that as well, Steve. I'd probably also look at, and we've discussed this before, Turanabol. Turanabol is an awesome drug, like Anavar, arguably minimal side effects as an oral, specifically produced for this exact reason, which enables you to keep or maintain your level of strength. That's precisely what it was used for in athletes, and also help maintain a level of cardiovascular ability. And when we talk about trends, we'll probably touch upon trend briefly, especially for recomposition, Steve. Trends has a massive impact on your cardiovascular ability, and using Turanabol helps you maintain or at least lose less than perhaps you might. And again, you're looking at, I think there, Steve, 30 milligrams for men, again, 4 to 8 weeks. And again, a great boost, as Steve's talked about, using products like Turanabol when he's run his 5Ks. So, yeah, give us a couple of injectables, Steve, before I jump back in.
Primobolan and Equipoise would be great. And you can run them, 500 milligrams would be plenty. So you can run them 300, 400 milligrams. If you like to do high repetition training, I'd go with the Primobolan. That was Arnold's favorite back in the 70s. A lot of those guys' favorites in the 70s. Equipoise would be good if you want to do more cardiocentric stuff. It's great for cardio. It will help your cardio without hurting it, if that makes sense. A lot of other steroids like Tren, like you mentioned, will damage your cardio tremendously. So you don't want to use Tren if you're going to go cardiocentric. So these are really good options that you can go for, and these would work good. And I think it makes sense to get on the semaglutide first for a little bit of time, and then you can add the steroids, do an 8 or 10 or 12 week
Absolutely,
cycle.
Steve. Let me just touch upon that for a second. One of the things we've discussed when it comes to weight loss protocols, and literally the first thing you should almost fix, is that you clean out your cupboards and you fix your diet straight away. You get comfortable eating better. Semaglutide, in all the studies, Steve, has been run for months. And typically, one study was 72 weeks, so over a year. So absolutely long term. And even the injectable type cycles that we're referring to, we're literally looking, I would argue, Steve, for the most part, at 12 weeks, maybe 16 weeks for a few users. I'm not a great fan of running product longer than that. Arguably, you could use orals or injectables for two times in a year's period, and this would literally need to be maintain muscle, look good, feel good, and at the same time, know damn well that you're losing fat and getting into the best shape you've arguably been of your life. Let me talk about briefly Ultima. Again, why do we talk about companies like Ultima and why do we like companies like Ultima? Look, the number one is that we know, because we've been doing this podcast a long time and we've been studying the game and being involved from our own personal experience a long fucking time, decades, and I know the history, is that we know just how poor sources have been in the past. I haven't probably seen this for about a year so when people were sort of like, my local supplier, my local dealer. People don't really use those terms anymore, but that was very common back in the day. So we like companies like Ultimate because we're not talking about fucking underground labs in Mexico, people brewing up in the kitchen, Steve. We're talking about companies that are quite often investing hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not more, just in the equipment. You can find companies like Ultima with pictures of the labs, the scales to weigh the milligrams, Steve. The scales secondhand can be $20,000 fucking dollars just for the accuracy of scales that are required for your dose. And they would buy the raws in the kilograms and manufacture hundreds of vials at a time. Now, how do you then build up reputation in industry? Is you produce good product, clean products, product that people are getting great results from for fucking years. I've known of labs, Steve, that have not even lasted a year. I've had product from labs that have not even lasted a year. Great, worked. Company blew up, spent tens of thousands of pounds on fucking growth hormone and he couldn't shift it. And yet the products they produced were great. But they just fucked it up. So look, it's super important that you use a great source like Ultima with solid ass products, Steve, that just are effective. And that's the sort of things that we like. Please note, we are not doctors and your opinions are ours. It is our view based on our experience and views on the topic. A podcast are for informational purposes and entertainment only, the freedom of speech and the First Amendment.